There will be no perfect solution. There's no number of conversations where we'd be like, great, now we have the perfect model. And the house that we built has been a hub of community and inspiration, I think, for me, certainly. And I think a number of people have spoken of that. And we've had, great storytelling events, or my friend's 3-year-old birthday party, where just even our neighbors were just lending us a bunch of toys, and we had a bouncy castle and movie nights, and just all kinds of energy that just, I walk around this house often, and I'm like, I'm just grateful that we were able to build this, and I'm proud to have founded that with you.
Welcome to Life Without Us, a podcast that shares stories about community and connection to inspire more of us to have more us in our lives. I'm Valerie Navarrete, a strategist, facilitator, and community builder who believes deeply that we need to recenter interdependence in order to thrive. Today on the podcast, we're talking about founding community. Joining me for a look back at our own experience as founders, I'm excited to welcome back to the show, Kareem Raskala. Kareem Raskala is a facilitator of connection, sometimes with technology infrastructure and increasingly with the expertise he's developed across more than 2 decades of experience founding and growing co-housing and co-living communities. Previously, Kareem served as the tech infrastructure lead at the Center for Social Innovation. Kareem isn't super into social media. If you want to learn more about him, you can check out one of the many media items linked in the show notes about the Clarence Commons co-house that we co-founded with some other folks. To connect with him as either a tech or co-housing and co-living consultant, you can reach out to him via email at karim.rizk@gmail.com. Kareem, welcome to Life Without Us. Thanks for being here.
As you know, I enthusiastically welcome any opportunity to collaborate with you. It's so great to be here.
So this is the final episode of the second season of this podcast, and the theme for this season has been time. And so with this in mind, I want to start by wishing us a happy anniversary, because as you know, it's kind of hard to believe, but it's been almost exactly 5 years since the offer that you and I made on Clarence Commons was accepted in December 2017. So happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to you. That is bananas. 5 years. I don't believe it.
Yeah. Time. What happened? Hence, you know, good theme for a podcast about community.
That's perfect.
Yeah, it really works. You know, what you learn over time and, the journey that you end up going on is huge. And so today we're gonna do that look back, and you want to explain just quickly for folks listening that it's been mentioned before on the podcast, and some folks have maybe read about us in the media. There were 6 co-founders of Clarence Commons, but the search for and the initial purchase of the home was just Kareem and I. And yeah, we have a lot of different traditions within the Clarence Commons community around celebration and ritual, and for sure are aware that within other circles, there's some common celebration rituals around parties and cake. And we just thought we'd do things a little differently, and that a fun way to celebrate things would be to interview each other on the podcast about what we've learned over the last 5 years, with the sort of thought that we might inspire some others. And I'm going to ask the first question, and then Kareem will ask a question, and it'll hopefully be fairly natural and organic. And, you know, we're going to have fun. So hopefully you all do as well. And I'll get us started. So we're going to borrow from a tradition that we use in my own house. My partner Daniel and I and our daughter at supper time have a practice where we ask each other to answer 3 questions, and it's about our day, but in our case, I'm going to suggest we do this sort of 5-year look back. And the 3 questions are, what are you grateful for? How did you fail? And what are you proud of? So Kareem, quick fire, What are you grateful for? How did you fail? And what are you proud of in our founding journey?
I love this tradition. I obviously know of it, and I love it because it applies in so many different contexts and scales. And so thinking in the scale of 5 years, I don't think I've answered this question at that scale before, but a thing I'm grateful for is that we did it. I think I'm grateful that we took the leap to take a number of risks, and as we will no doubt discuss, some things like went better or worse or had friction or was super easy or whatever. But generally that we found each other, and maybe I will expand that to specifically you, but also to sort of collaborators. How did I fail? Oh, let me count the ways. I think, oh man, I don't know which one. I need to pause here for a moment.
If you need to borrow from our daughter's favorite answer, it's, I failed to fail. Yeah, she doesn't use it a lot, but every once in a while, she's just like, I don't want to talk about failure. So.
Yeah, my problem is I'm a perfectionist. You know, I care too much. There's a number of things. I think there's a humility theme in the last few years that I'm finding really useful that's come up in a few different ways, and that I didn't have as much going into this. I think I relied a lot on the sort of relational casual models that had been the case in previous co-housing, co-living arrangements where a bunch of friends of mine and I rented together, where, you know, we figured things out as we went, and the stakes certainly went up a significant level in co-ownership and even like the amount of costs around all of that and so on. And I think more structure around like decision-making, governance, whatever that we had, we really did do pretty well. So I'm like, it wasn't a total omission, but really extra process up front, I think would have saved some of what was relying on like things hopefully going fairly well. I mean, it's a little risk averse, I guess, but I think not only for our sake, but generally as a process, I think we did this well in some areas, but not in others. There's some moments there where I was like, we'll figure it out. And the occasional time where you were like, how about we figure it out now? It was like often wise advice, you know, and yeah. And thing I'm proud of is that, you know, despite saying that, there will be no perfect solution. There's no number of conversations where we'd be like, great, now we have the perfect model. And the house that we built has been a hub of community and inspiration, I think, for me, certainly. And I think a number of people have spoken of that. And we've had, you know, great storytelling events, or my friend's 3-year-old birthday party, where just even our neighbors were just lending us a bunch of toys, and we had a bouncy castle and movie nights and just all kinds of energy that just, I walk around this house often and I'm like, I'm just grateful that we were able to build this. And I'm proud to have founded that with you.
Thank you for sharing. I'll do my best to do a quick fire approach on this. I'm really grateful that we connected when we did. It really was one of those, you know, couldn't have been better timing. You know, I was in the process of really exploring co-buying with another friend. It wasn't necessarily emerging that we had a shared vision. And it was actually him, you know, our friend Rob, who connected me to you, saying like, oh, you might be a bit more aligned with Kareem. And it was just perfect timing. Like I was in a place where I'd set an intention for the year to, as I phrased it, explore a return to living with people, because I'd been living on my own at the time. And I really don't think, like, if we hadn't connected when we did, had the experience we had, which we may or may not have talked about on the show, but we've certainly talked about it with our broader community. Like, essentially, you crashed my car and we had to navigate that stress in what was, you know, a relatively new friendship at the time. I really think if that series of events hadn't have happened right at the moment where I was kind of like in a place where I think at one point I remember saying to you, look, if we don't buy a house within the next couple of months, like I'm probably going to do something else. So if we could, you know, and you were in a place of like, let's just do the thing, let's try the thing. And as you mentioned, maybe didn't have other folks that were quite as ready to hit go as I was, you know. Everything that's happened since, I mean, you literally, you know, are the person who introduced me to my partner. Like everything that's happened since has been amazing as well. But I think particularly grateful that we connected when we did and got to go on this founding journey together. How did I fail? I want to flag that I really deeply failed to anticipate the way life would evolve. And I mean, you never can, life happens. But I underestimated the degree to which in a group of six people as co-founders, you know, many of whom were in a stage of life, I just want to call it out, you know, it is more likely sort of late 20s to late 30s as I was, where you sometimes do end up making some big like life decisions, meeting a partner, potentially moving, taking new jobs. I think a failure to better anticipate the likelihood that there would have been some people exiting over the course of the first 5 years of our house. It, you know, I felt, at least for myself, I was so certain that I was going to be living in Clarence Commons for at least 5 years and possibly for way longer. And that mindset really shaped a lot of how I approached the process. That, yeah, I think was a bit of a failure to be that certain of anything, especially as someone who had so many major life changes up until that point. And then what am I proud of? I'm really, really proud of and this is just very personal, but the relationships that I've been able to continue to cultivate even after leaving Clarence Commons and moving cities to you know, be with my partner and our daughter. I guess this is the emotional part, but just to give a quick example, I recently stayed at the house for a few days as I was in Toronto to be present for the celebration of life for my mom who passed away. And I just can't even find words to say how held I felt in that experience by everybody in the house, and just how loved. And, you know, I know that there could have been a scenario where I moved out, especially it was right during the pandemic, and all of us just sort of slowly drifted apart, as often happens when people are in different geographic locations. And so I'm proud of myself, I'm proud of all of you, and I'm just proud of us that that those relationships have remained as strong as they have, and you know, that we all continue to show up for each other.
I'm grateful for that too. It's always been one of our visions, but it's not always easy to do, that the community extends beyond the immediate housemates and, you know, our neighbors and friends and whatever is one of them, but certainly former housemates is a fantastic connection that I'm glad we've been able to maintain.
Thank you.
Next question.
Yeah, let's do it. Over to you.
So if you could send a message back in time to yourself in the weeks leading up to or just after when we first bought the house that became Clarence Commons, what one piece of advice would you send yourself?
So I think I'll lived off of what I was saying around anticipating, you know, the possibility for people exiting. I do feel like there's some things maybe we would have done differently in terms of, you know, even getting into the weeds of like our legal agreement, our financial structure. But maybe at a higher level, I think some more reflection on what needed to be in place in terms of sort of offboarding and onboarding people culturally, and as well as the process that would need to be walked through, I guess. We kind of learned the path by walking it around actually buying people out and then, you know, having a new owner come in or co-owner come in. I feel like the agreement that we put together was fantastic. We were completely like and wonderfully guided by a good friend of our community who's a lawyer and offered us expertise. But I also feel like mindset wise, you know, it really felt like to me anyways, that was a like, we probably won't need this kind of like a just in case kind of a thing. I think even back to some of the media interviews we did in those first 2 years, we were like, yeah, you know, we've got this just in case, but like, really, we would just trust ourselves to have a conversation and figure it out. And we did, you know, have some of that really positive, you know, you have a conversation. And, you know, when I was putting my hand up and saying, you know, I'm going to be moving to Ottawa, really a word that we use a lot was like, what would it mean to exit with grace? And I do feel like, as you said, you know, a lot of relationally, a lot of times we just navigated things, you know, with real grace and success. And at the same time, I feel like we maybe would have put something different or different framing, I think, to thinking about entries and exits, if there had been a bit more awareness for me, at least, of the likelihood that that there would be some exits, you know, and in our case, that ended up happening within the first couple of years. So that's a message that I would send back. And as I said, I don't know if that sounds like a repeat of the fail, but maybe just like a bit of an elaboration. What about you? I don't know. What do you think of my answer? Would you agree?
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, it's a bit tough because I think we did so many things so well. And so what we don't know are the issues that might have happened if we did something differently, right? And capacity was a thing, right? Like it's just we if we had an extra year and certainty of a house and infinite budget and da da da, there's a bunch of things we could do differently. So I'm a little like sympathetic to past us for having nailed quite a number of elements. But then I definitely was a like, don't worry about that. That's worst case scenario. And worst case scenario is melodramatic. I think there are some things that are just like realistic. Life happens. And we were like, life happens. So we need some protections. But yeah, leaning in a little more into that clarity, you know, looking back with hindsight, I think it is obvious. But even with foresight, we found more energy. Like, would there have been ways to make some of our conversations about certain reno processes shorter, and then just accept imperfection in the paint color or design of the room of whatever, but a little more time on the decision-making, conflict resolution, whatever. That seems good now, but we were doing a lot. We were doing a lot, and we had 7-hour meetings once a week. You know, it was a lot. So I don't know, but I agree. And also, yeah.
Like, as you're talking, actually, it brings up for me, because we've mentioned this, like it was a fairly accelerated process. So to just paint a picture for people, you and I, okay, you crashed my car in the summer of 2017.
All right. Every time with that car. Right. Yeah.
My car, fondly known as Rebecca Potato. And we navigated that. And then I think we started looking at houses in September with this sort of like, let's see what's out there. And then it was, I looked this up yesterday, actually, like, I think we closed, What's the word for, our offer was accepted and we removed our conditions on that offer in December of 2017. And then we had to find our co-founders. And that was a fairly, I think it was like maybe like about a month by the time we had that first, it was like a brunch where I think almost everyone but one person was able to be there. And then we had until March 29th was the closing date to get, you know, our ducks in order in terms of, you know, knowing that we were all going to be on title and that we were going to be tenants in common, and we had a lender, and then we started a reno, and then we were
These are all like mutant six-headed ducks too, right? They're not normal ducks that you have to get in a row. Every step is like, how do you have this kind of duck in a row?
This even a duck type conversations with banks? And so, and then we were moved in by August, and we undertook a significant renovation. Like, we really gutted significant parts of the house and rewired the whole thing, et cetera. And so I guess I wonder, like, in terms of what would you do differently? Obviously it wasn't a reality and we did what we did and it in some ways worked because we were on an accelerated path, but would you have gone back and said, take more time? Would you have, or don't buy a house until you have your co-founders lined up? Like, is any of that something you would do differently or you'd advise others to take more time?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, time is great, but no, I definitely am glad that we sort of bought the house. I think that was an important sort of landing point, starting point, accelerant, like it made the thing real. We bought a house that worked in so many ways. And of course it's imperfect. So I think that actually going in with something imperfect and running with it is what made the following 5 years possible. And the following 5 years has so many great things and, of course, imperfect elements. So I think that accelerated timeline is what made this a reality.
No, I agree. I don't think it would have happened. I mean, I literally was in a place where I was like, if we don't do this in the next little while, I'm going to do something else. So it was what it was. But
yeah, and some people only joined. They were like, oh, there's a thing in 2 months. Great. Yeah,
and we know where it's located and we're not just imagining and we're not spending months and months sort of visioning only to maybe not have it happen. But
yeah,
I guess I was just coming maybe from that perspective of like, would you tell somebody else to take even just a little bit longer, you know, like.
I think I stand in the like, it's going to be imperfect anyway. So lean in and let's all do the best we can. But can we shift priorities a bit and make sure that certain pieces are hit and we're aligned on it. So yeah. The message I'd send back in time, there's sort of two. One is a high-ish level like yours, and one is very practical. The very practical one is I wish we had gone more electrical and less gas. We sort of went with the infrastructure that was there and we're like, cooking with gas is fun, but both from an environmental perspective and like energy perspective generally, we later were like, let's get solar panels. But then we just frankly weren't using enough electricity to make that worthwhile because you can't put like electricity back in the grid now at this point. So we had, so we use gas and we can't sort of, we're sort of stuck there. It would have been cool to go more electric and more solar. And then there's a topic around money. And I think there, again, we just did so many things to the best of our abilities within a system that is super capitalist and resists every one of our attempts to make things more like balanced and not so emphasizing who already has money. So we had consensus decision-making and we tried to move resources around in such a way that anyone can be an owner. And so I think we did a number of things well, but I think a bit of the message maybe for ourselves, but really more externally, it was hard how frequently people approaching us were like, yeah, like how else are you going to get in the housing market? Or like, I'd like to talk to you about co-housing because I want to invest in the real estate. You know, I think it would have been important to nail in our model if possible, but I think there we did the best we could. But in our communications, just how much this is about community. And I don't know, I guess we tried to do that, but so this is another one where I'm like, yeah, we actually
we did our best with what we could. It was hard to find a lender. It was hard, like we may or may not be, but there was some comment that we may have been the first house to have had six people on title in Canada, like six individual single people that were not couples or, you know, family members. So we were, I think, breaking some ground, and that made our options limited because otherwise, like I've commented that I, similar to you, from a desire to make it not an investment opportunity, because for some folks, maybe it felt like that a little bit more, but I know I can speak for myself. Like I had the financial resources to have gone out and bought my own thing. Like you and I, in fact, actually qualified to carry this house on our own. And then we could have had other people living with us as renters. And we were very clearly not interested in maximizing, you know, the investment to our own benefit and wanted to bring in other people. And I feel like there are over time, I've learned about models that may or may not have been available to us, but I think are increasingly, you know, needing to be made available and better understood for other folks wanting to do something like this, where it's not everybody on title, you know. And I think that would both address that issue around exits being easier, but also potentially create a framework within which you could put limits on how much return you might expect over being part of this type of a project that aren't in line with the absolutely bonkers housing market, where people are thinking that, you know, they buy into a house like this, and then if they want to exit, they're going to get some, you know, huge payout, because it's not the same thing. Like, this isn't, you know, and there are businesses like that. Like, I think there's even a business out there now that I heard about where people are buying sort of proportionate ownerships of houses. Of course, there's REITs. Like, there's ways in which that monetization of housing is out there for people that's what it's about. This is different. And so then what is the setup so that it is easier for people to exit and enter, and B, there is an understanding that this isn't about maximizing profit. This is about maximizing community.
Yeah. And that might tie into the next question. And then the other one I think is, and again, this is a thing we did try to do, but I think I would prioritize a little more, is more like celebrations and events in the midst of the heavy work where we like don't have time for it, just more play and fun. And I think we did really like silly up meetings and things like that where we could, but I would bring that. I think the importance of that was known, but not something that was as easy to prioritize when we had like a 7-hour reno meeting or whatever. Like, how do we still like have a little party and a community celebration and so on? And we definitely did some, but I would emphasize that not only for fun, but also as a community bonding, team bonding element.
Related, although I'm definitely moving into solutionizing to what you just said, so I apologize. But I've wondered if there were some areas where if we had brought in, whether it would have been paid folks or whether it would have been just members of our community to help us with some pieces, you know, like someone other than us facilitating some of our decision making around our reno, for example, like if there might have been ways that we could have freed up ourselves, because we were doing so much heavy lifting around so many major pieces. And yeah, if there had been some ability to bring in some others on some pieces, even once we were in the house as well, right? So like if a conflict came up, like if there had been a clear process to like, and this is when you do X, like versus oftentimes we were kind of, you know, the expression, changing the tire while driving the car, right? So we're trying to do so much and learn so much as we're in the midst of living in the house and figuring it all out. And so would bringing in some additional supports in some cases have freed us up to have more fun? I don't know.
Yeah. And that's generally like, I think we're all like, do it ourselves was a quality and something we could be proud of, is like the amount of things that we did. I mean, the reno, we did get a contracting team and we did get somebody to come and do sociocracy training.
And we
didn't build everything. We had an electrician, thankfully, but yeah, there's elements. And so we did that in some cases. And then sometimes, as you know, getting external help doesn't necessarily make things faster or better. So, you know, some of that's hindsight. But I agree with you. I think that there is a general culture of like, we can do it, where it's like we can, but would rest and play be a higher priority for some of these elements? That's an interesting angle, even though, again, hindsight makes this all easier. I think we did great.
I totally agree. We did so well. I'm extremely proud of this project. And at the same time, looking back, you know, it's this opportunity for us and others to learn. So speaking of learning, is there anything you feel like we should have done differently or you wish we had done differently, specifically around that issue of several co-founders, including me, moving out sooner than we anticipated and a number of new people joining?
Definitely one of the things we did well there was this sort of culture of celebration and like, care for the people coming in and out. And you, I think, co-created a really cool like sunset sunrise process that I think had a lot of nice like community energy around that transition. But I think there's some stuff that we noticed with the people who joined the community that like 6 months later were like, oh, we never talked about that. And we never discussed that. And some stuff that were just kind of like on the casual side of like, oh, we'll figure it out as we go. And most of it we did, but certainly one of the things we've refined since is our like onboarding process to just be way more specific about like, hey, here are just like, first of all of the things you need to like know how they work, or putting you on the thermostat app or whatever, so that you're like fully there and even have a sense of how these things work. But as we transitioned, because all of these transitions were, you know, unexpected, of course, and also long, there's enough bureaucracy and mortgage adjustments and different things that we had to figure out. Some of the like culture building that we did as the original six, I, who had been there, kind of was like, cool, we'll just keep doing that. But there would have been value in together regrounding in that set of like tools, values, skills. And we've done bits and pieces of that, but like a really clear, grounded process, I think would go a long way, not only to clarifying those tools, but also to bringing the people together, you know, right from the beginning.
Yeah, I hear that. And I would build on it, even though I wasn't part of the new people coming. I do feel like even in my time, the culture building, and specifically, I don't know why, but for me, we never ended up creating a vision statement. And I don't know that it had to be called a vision statement. It could have been a purpose statement. Like I work in strategy and strategic planning, and I am one of those people that thinks it really doesn't matter what you call it, but taking the time to really just sort of say, like, what are we trying to achieve here? Like, what is our, you know, what is our vision, is something we didn't really do. And so I feel like when people, like new people joined, or even in the process of trying to recruit people, it was sometimes a little bit hard to sort of have a quick reference, like, and this is what we're doing and who we are and what we're about. And, you know, I think there was a process that we went through. It was really, I remember it being pretty fun around identifying some values. And I think those are really important. But I often say, and I borrow this from someone else, like there's a gap between the values themselves and how you live the values. And I feel like how you live the values is the culture, and to ground that culture, I think some sort of a vision statement to situate like why these are the values and to what are we trying to aspire would have been helpful. So not so much. I don't know that achieves your previous comment around more fun, because as I'm talking about it, it's sounding really dry and boring, but like trusting that maybe we could have found a fun way of doing that, and that onboarding new people to it could also somehow be a little bit fun. But yeah, I think that could have been a benefit.
I have a vision statement festival party, dance party. I agree. I think all of those pieces, you know, and so then there's just a bit of a like, do it all as well as you can.
Oh, absolutely. And also just like adding to the fun comment, one of my favorite memories are the dance parties that Sabrina started hosting just before the pandemic. And then she did a few virtually at the start of the pandemic. And they were Wednesday nights, and they were from like 6 to 7 or something. Like it was a very like, instead of going for a drink after work, come dance at our house for an hour. And those were a highlight for me. So just for those listening, we also did have fun. We just, you know, there could have been more fun.
We talked about what we're proud of, but I wonder if you can think of a moment that was like particularly memorable, surprising, of your experience in the Commons.
Yeah, I mean, like just reflective of where I am right now and what I've been going through, I really enjoyed the way my parents got to be part of the journey, and I have this memory of my mom coming and cutting bushes with us and bundling them. And, you know, for me, part of what I was seeing with this return to living with others wasn't just like anyone, or, you know, as I said, I could have bought a place and had tenants. And like, it wasn't that. I really did want to co-live. I really did want to create community. And so for me and my family of origin, acts of service is like a huge love language, and doing projects and building stuff together, cutting down trees and bundling them up, and is really important. And so to feel like I was able to do that, like in a way that was with all of you that I was living with, and then also involve my parents, my family of origin, was just one of those like this is the life that I want to be living moments. And I don't know, like, it's not the fun party stuff, and it's not that I don't like that stuff too, but I just do really get such a joy out of building stuff with people and doing stuff with people, and that whole like many hands make light work, look what we did kind of feeling.
It's a great answer. I really think, yeah, the dinners where we had people's like family around, or we had that parent holiday dinner once, and it was like just cool seeing people's that other gen in there. I think for me that the thought that comes to mind, really building off of that, a friend of mine and I were talking the other day about errand hangs and how like nice it is to hang out, but like also do your groceries or whatever. And that's one of the things that co-housing kind of builds in. And so probably one of the favorite days for me is home improvement day, when we all get together and just pick some sort of like things that aren't specifically people's chores, but like a deeper clean or building a shelf or painting a this or that and doing it together. And even better than that is the highlights where, like, you know, your partner Dan was here, or somebody's parent, or your dad, or somebody, and we had a bit of the external community. Friends came out and helped us build stuff together. Reminded me of even the Reno days, where we had a bunch of friends come and help us paint,
yeah,
or sand
parties,
or whatever.
Yeah,
and it was just like, yeah, this like building together, like breaking bread together is great, and building the oven is also
you're gonna
great
bake
together.
The bread in, yeah, for sure. Yeah, those paint days were really fun. And also, I just want to make sure that I give a shout out to Nui Nights, because I think for me, actually, particularly since being in another city, and the fact that you, with the sort of nudge of the pandemic, started having an online participation to them, has been just like so important. You know, like, I'm in a new city and I don't have the community here that I do, you know, back home in Toronto or living in Clarence Commons, and to know that I can just click a link and come watch a movie with y'all, you know, once a week, it's just precious.
There's something there about regularity, I think, that I don't know how to plug into this episode, but every Wednesday movie night, or once a month our meetings, or every Tuesdays our house dinner, these things that have a sort of recurring energy have a certain ritual to them, and they're very simple things, but they are really nice to do, and to have an ease of coming together where we don't have to figure out what our plan is. There's just a simple formula, and it's good.
Yeah, for sure. Regularity, repetition.
Movie nights, send me an email.
Yes, everyone now has Kareem's email. So,
so when we started this journey, we were both full-time employees, and now we're both working as consultants. And for both of us, that includes providing services to co-housing, co-living communities. As you step into being more of a service provider to other folks interested in or already living in community, what is a top resource that you find yourself directing clients to?
So obviously this podcast, but that's a little too self-promotional.
Snaps.
So
yes,
folks, I'm really not good at marketing. So anytime it actually occurs to me to promote myself, I try to lean into it. I'm going to reference another podcast. It's actually just one episode of a podcast that I really like, because it does a very quick job of walking through a framework around conflict that I think is really useful. It's one of those things that, you know, speaking of onboarding or what we could have done differently, it's one of those things that you can sort of be like, okay, everybody listen to this, and then we'll talk about it. And like, it'll just give us some shared language around navigating conflict. And so if you want to look it up, the host's name is Michelle Lisen. I'm going to probably say this wrong, but Michelle Lisenberry Christensen. or Lisenberg Christensen, but I'm sure you can just find the name of the episode. It's called The Heart of Intimacy, The Root of Conflict. And it's not about co-housing and not about co-living, but I do feel the concepts are really relevant. And just 30-second description, the idea is around circles. And in any relationship with two people, you each have your own individual circle, and it's your job to know that circle and be aware of what you need, you want, you desire. And then there's a third circle, which is the relationship circle that you agree to step into. And so there's a lot of really good stuff around consent and around not jumping into someone else's circle. And I highly recommend it for anybody that is going to be in relationship with other people, whether that's co-living or romantic partnership. I think it's even useful in family relationships. And anyway, I could go on and on. I'll stop there. Kareem, what about you? Do you have a favorite resource to refer people to?
So definitely promoting yourself is hard. So let me promote you a bit. I really think this podcast has a number of episodes that bring in themes that are super relevant, sort of similar to the general idea of, like, if you're thinking of doing co-housing, co-living, can you visit communities? Like, just hearing other people's experiences is generally really valuable. And another podcast that's the theme is one called Inside Community. And specifically, the episode I would recommend is episode 4. It's called Finding Co-Founders and Creating Cooperative Culture with Jana Ludwig. Jana Ludwig is super experienced and super impressive. And because it's about the sort of initial co-founding phase, that episode just tends to overview a number of elements. So it's a good, like, starting point. But both this series and that series have a number of good episodes that are good. And one of the truisms is, like, if you can visit other communities, try and do that.
Absolutely. I want to plus one to the Inside Community podcast. It's, I find, to be a really good resource. And there's, just for folks to know, there's also an episode in that podcast, the first season, about conflict, that is also really good. And yes, I keep bringing up conflict. Honestly, it's partly because when I talk to other communities, including on the show, and thinking about our own experience, it's not that everyone's, like, in these horrible fights all the time. It's actually, like, often these very little things. And it's like, well, how do you deal with that little thing that, if it's not dealt with, can get bigger? And it's like, how often we replace the dish sponge so that it doesn't get smelly. Like, it's that kind of stuff. And for sure, if you're going to be doing this, it's going to be really beautiful, and there's going to be some conflict. So figuring out how to deal with it, super important. Speaking of resources, we are, as Kareem mentioned, now ourselves a resource. We are both doing consulting, and sometimes that involves co-living and co-housing communities. And so we're really excited to be getting ready to host our first event together in quite some time. It's a workshop called Co-Learning About Co-Founding.
Yeah, we get asked a lot of questions about co-living, co-housing, and other intentional community stuff around vision and strategy and legal structure, financial models, etc. And so we're hosting an event on January 14th, 2023, for folks who are beyond the, like, what is co-living, co-housing phase, who want to gather with us and others to accelerate your existing vision toward reality.
So the idea is that we'll share some of our own insights, we'll review some resources together, and then we'll have a dedicated Q&A time. And as I think we've demonstrated on this episode, often you don't know what you don't know. So we want to gather and help folks start to think about some of the things sooner than later to set yourselves up for co-housing and co-living success. And we will post details about how to register on the show notes. And we always welcome folks to reach out if they're not sure if it's for them, or have any questions about the workshop or how to register. Please do connect with us. We love engaging with people. We love community. So we'd love to hear from you. And that's our show. Kareem, it's been, as always, such a pleasure connecting and learning together. And once again, happy 5-year, oh my God, we bought a house anniversary. And thank you for being here.
Happy 5 years. Here's to 50 more.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Life Without Us. I've been your host, Valerie Navarrete.
I partner with people and organizations dedicated to social change, and I am an audacious believer in the centrality of us to that work. If you or someone you know is in need of a strategist, facilitator, speaker, or coach who centers community, I'd love to hear from you. Reminder to check the show notes for links to information shared in today's episode, to please share this podcast with the community lover in your life, and to come interact with me online. You can get bonus content and sign up for my newsletter at lifewithoutuspod.com. And you can hang out with me on Instagram at lifewithoutuspod. I'll see you there.